WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk. This is Memorial Day. Final Monday of May. Hope you had a chance to enjoy the weekend and also remember those who gave the supreme sacrifice for our freedoms, those who have served our country and never were able to come back and enjoy those freedoms that they helped secure. Our radio program will start off commemorating Memorial Day, as I try to do on a regular basis, whether it's Memorial Day or even Veterans Day, pay homage to our veterans and remember those who gave their lives in battle in many wars that our country has been involved with. Our first guest, right after traffic, we will speak with Tony O'Brien Sr. Tony, a proud member of not only the Navy, he was a Navy SEAL, also a Marine. The one thing that has always stayed with me is the many times that I've done community events covering Memorial Day events and seeing Tony interacting with our youth and talking to them about the importance of Memorial Day or the importance of Veterans Day and giving them an understanding or providing an understanding as to what it is that our military does, the different branches. Tony will join us and we'll talk about Memorial. What does Memorial Day mean? Not to get overly deep here, but again, I feel it's the best representation to doing this radio program this evening. We'll follow that with talking to Peter Brown, who is a premier sponsor. You know, Peter is a local businessman who is very, very much invested in our community. We'll talk with him about the general reopening, everything opening up. Talk to him about some of the upcoming events now that it seems as though we have COVID in the rearview mirror. Hour number two, we will speak with Whitman Town Administrator Lincoln Heineman, as we'll talk a little bit about that community getting ready to head off to town meeting this week. Lincoln being a newly chosen town administrator, what it's going through, what it's been like for him to put together this budget, doing it during the times of a pandemic. We'll chat with him about that. And then we'll close things out with a man who has, God has given him one head, but he is able to wear and fit many a hat or fix many a hat to his head as he is known for so many different things. Who am I talking about? Mike Joshua. Mike Joshua, who he finally, if you look at his Facebook title, producer, writer, filmmaker, drummer, DJ, and dad, gentleman who hosts Americanorama here on 95.9 WATD, founder, executive director of Plymouth Rocks. He's also the vice president of the Stoll Homestead Education Center. Not to mention podcasts that he produces. He actually is a producer of Saints, Sinners, and Serial Killers. You know, the two best-selling authors that we have on here on a regular basis, Casey Sherman, Dave Wedge. We'll talk with him about doing that as well as a new film or a film that he actually helped put together. I didn't realize that he was a filmmaker. We'll talk with him about that as well. So that's all coming up with Mike Joshua to close out our program. Right now, though, time for us to give you a final traffic report of the evening, being brought to you by Brendan Smoke Shop, online at brendansmokeshop.com, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and Weymouth.
Well, thanks, Kevin. The Bourne and the Sagamore are delay-free. Route 3 North is backed up from Route 53 up to Route 18. The Expressway northbound is sluggish from Granite Ave up to Freeport Street. This report is sponsored by UPSJobs.com. Want a job that gets you more? Join UPS. Warehouse workers earn more than $24 per hour after bonuses. Apply now at upsjobs.com/Shrewsbury. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. I gotta give credit where credit is due. Al Gamash & Son, Michael Green Painting, and Foley Electric. Without these local contractors, Brennan Smoke Shop would be ugly. Every store we open, these guys get better and better at building them out. Take the new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, for instance. We put the display cases and the huge, absolutely enormous walk-in humidor on the same light switch. Thank you, Foley Electric. Justin Gamash, the & Son, put a ramp in for the two-wheel dolly that carries the product from our local wholesaler, William Zoll & Son. Michael Green Painting. Oh my God, dude. They're like thing one, thing two, thing three, thing four, except they put paint on, not take it off. Come see their workmanship at our new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, June 2021. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and soon New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
Okay, so we're back with our first segment of the evening. And when I think of wrapping up Memorial, I sometimes wish that my radio program was on a Friday, because my next guest, I wish he would be able to kind of help us encapsulate the importance of Memorial Day and talk about, again, and if there's one person who can give you real talk and put things in a proper perspective, I think of Anthony O'Brien Sr., a gentleman who has served his country not only in the Navy, but also in the Marines, Navy SEAL. He joins us for this conversation. I love having him on to not only talk about the military, the importance of recognizing America, Memorial Day, those who gave their lives, supreme sacrifice, usually anything. Tony is great when it comes to talking. Mr. O'Brien, my friend, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Mr. Tachi, thank you, sir, and for your kind introduction. It's always great to be on with you. It's always great to be, it's an honor to be asked and asked to represent the military and, you know, and do a little bit of public relations. I enjoy doing it. Off air, we were talking about some of the stuff we've done together in that regard, too, especially the stuff in the schools and that. And I don't know what's more valuable than that, but greatly appreciate that. And I must say, and I don't do a lot of gratuitous where we kind of like just, you know, throw stuff at each other. You and I kind of aren't like that. But I'm a fan. Listen to your stuff. Read your stuff. You're still the South Shore's hardest working journalist. I appreciate it. Mean it. And fan of all the other folks that you work with in all those different offices. So congratulations.
You know, for many years, I've watched you as you give of your time freely when it comes to whether it's for parades, depending on what community is on the South Shore, whether it's going to different schools and talking about the importance of Memorial Day and the importance of giving back civically. Let's start out with, you know, letting folks know that what the importance of Memorial Day really, really is. And it's more than just, hey, I opened my pool. Hey, it's the start of summer.
You know, yeah, but I don't want to be I also don't want to be the, and with all due respect to the, some of the grumpy old veterans, I don't want to be one of them that says, you know, don't do the barbecue, come on. I mean, I don't do that. And, you know, I'll have a, a refreshment with that guy later on tonight. Yeah, I mean, it's a three-day weekend. It's a holiday weekend. It's the start of summer. It's the pool. You know, been there, done that. And getting together with family, which is, I mean, what's more important than that? Yeah, okay, honoring our veterans, honoring those who made the ultimate sacrifice. That's pretty important. And you know, the reason why we get to have the freedoms and democracies that we have so that our families can live that sort of life is due to those sacrifices. We really don't need to pick and choose which one's more important than the other. And I can easily, you know, patronize the veterans community and, you know, say that down at the VFW. But I don't, because we can do it all. And so let's have a good time this weekend. But yeah, let's stop and remember. I had another speaking engagement earlier, and it actually started in a cemetery, which was kind of a cool choice by the journalist that we talked about earlier. And, you know, cemeteries are interesting places, and there's a lot going on right now. I'm helping out in Brockton. They're decorating the graves. And, of course, Whitman is also this weekend with, you know, fresh flags, new markers, the little medallions for our veterans and their families, especially, to honor their service. And, you know, it's for some of us, it's there's a little bit of therapy to it also. Memorial Day is one of the more, you know, I'm supposed to be Tony O'Brien, combat vet, tough guy, blah, blah. Memorial Day is tough. You know, I know a lot of these Gold Star families in the region. And for them, for me, I was very, very fortunate. And I was able to get out of the way enough such that, you know, I didn't lose anybody in my combat tours. But I certainly know plenty of people that were lost. And it's hard. And you know these Gold Star families as well. Spent some time in Pembroke earlier in the week, and they've got three just from the war in the Middle East in the last two decades. And our old friend Dave McPhillips is back at the Veteran Service Office, and he is a Gold Star dad, of course, Vietnam veteran on his own regard, and his own renown. And you know, Lieutenant Brian McPhillips was killed in Iraq, and you know, for them and for a lot of us. But most especially them. I don't want to compare myself to them and the sacrifice they made. Memorial Day is kind of every day, and it makes it tough. And but you gotta stay focused on the prize, which is the causes that we're with, especially freedom and democracy, and making it as strong as we can in this country. And yes, it takes sacrifice. And we also should pause to remember, as many of us do daily, those who are still serving in harm's way, today, tomorrow, in the future. And I'm also somebody, you've heard my message, you know, I hate to call it a message, because it is from the heart. Message sounds kind of canned, but I also include, and I am from the law enforcement community too, but folks that wear the uniform, police and fire, first responders who put themselves in harm's way every day as well. I include them in the thank you for your service. This is also, May is also Law Enforcement Memorial Month. And so I thank them for their service and for those who have passed. And we've had that with police, unfortunately, here on the South Shore, on the Cape, in the last few years in tough, tough circumstances. You know, thank you to them and their families for their incredible sacrifices as well.
What is it like to go into an elementary school or go into a middle school and talk about giving service, being, you know, your service to your country, and having them understand what it's like to serve your country proudly?
There's almost no greater honor. There's almost no greater honor. What, you know, look, a lot of folks our age, plus or minus X years, their mind's kind of made up on this stuff. So those folks, you have an impact. I also, by the way, when it comes to thank you for your service, I like to talk about our schools, the staffs, the faculty, et cetera. I mean, the great service that they do, and especially under the circumstances of the past year, is huge. And then also, I'm not going to lie to you, you know, you go to some of these schools, and I'm no celebrity. I don't want to be a celebrity, but keep it a rock star. And you know, it's kind of nice. But just to have an impact on kids, you know, I didn't take it for granted, but it didn't mean as much to me as it does now with having my own kids and small kids who I, you know, try to have an impact on, obviously, every day, too. My even at only 7 and 9, my kids are already talking about possibly serving, and I would support that. If they don't, I'm fine with that too. You know, they're gonna find their way, and it's not meant for everybody. And I mean, I'm gonna love up on them because they're my kids, so whatever they want to do. And it's funny because I never until I had my own kids. I mean, you know the deal, Dad. It's you know, you look at kids differently than before you had kids, because it's almost like, you know, they're not your kids. But how you view yourself through their eyes and how important it is more intense, and it's a good thing. And I value it, and it's critical to, shall we say, not screw it up and do it well. And so I try to do that. It's an honor. It truly is an honor. I know some of the stuff that I say sounds kind of like it's cliche. You know, I don't get accused of that very often because most people that know me know I'm pretty authentic, and you're the same way, and that's why we connect so well.
You know, we look at those folks who have given service, and you know, over the past few years, I've heard it said more than once, you know, that the greatest generation, the folks who fought World War II, we're slowly losing those folks who proudly served and helped us win in the different theaters of war and battle. Talk to me about, you know, slowly losing those individuals who fought so proudly.
Yeah, it's tough. It was funny that you say that. I was just thinking about, not to slip into the city too easily and quickly, but you and I come from there quite a bit with our work and personal lives. But yeah, I think it was yesterday. I was just thinking about Eddie Leonard and George Cataldo.
Yep, me too.
And it's funny because even though, you know, you're focusing your professional efforts in other towns, and I know you're in and out of the city too, those guys were so awesome as greatest generation role models, leaders, representatives that they're known. Especially Eddie in Whitman, because he was one of the officers in the Whitman VFW for so long. And in fact, that's how I got to Whitman. I was in Brockton at the Brockton VFW, and Eddie Leonard put me in a headlock and said, and for the folks that don't know, Eddie Leonard is a World War II veteran. I'm going to guess and say he died about 5-6 years ago at something like the age of 93 or 4. He was still golfing. But Eddie Leonard was the one that put me in a headlock and dragged me over to Whitman and says, hey, you know, we're doing this, that, and the other thing over here. I think you'd like it better. And the rest is history. I mean, I really had a great, I'm still in Whitman doing great things. It's a big operation, and it's an honor to be involved with it. But, and you remember this other name, another regional guy is Louis Tarantino. And Louis Tarantino, POW, yep. In World War II in Germany. And he's 98, just turned 98. And living down in Plymouth and doing very well mentally and physically, he's still a pistol. But it's so funny too, that pun wasn't intended, but I just caught myself. Those three guys were funny guys, lived long lives into their 90s. Who wouldn't love that? And they had great sense of humor. And they saw some stuff, some bad stuff. It's tough, and that's the legacy, and we stand on their shoulders. But we have to move forward. I've got two hats right here that are official Navy hats. I brought them in as props intentionally. Yesterday when I was on with Pembroke TV, I was wearing a hat because it was very windy. We were outside, and I was wearing one of these hats, and this hat is the USS McFall. And that's for Don McFall, who was one of my SEAL teammates, and also this who got the Navy Cross in the Battle of Panama. And, of course, unfortunately, was KIA. Killed in action, as was Mike Mansour, who was killed in Iraq. And he also has a ship named after him. One of the greatest honors you can get in the Navy is to have a ship named after you, especially these are enlisted sailors. These aren't big shots and presidents and senators and officers. They're enlisted. That's very, very unusual. And so I honor them by wearing their hats. And, I mean, to me, That's what it's about. I run into veterans. Some are wearing their gear, some are not. And when they're not, I try to nudge them in that direction. Because, you know, they'll connect with me. They'll see me wearing the hat or the jacket or whatever, and they'll say, hey, did you do this? And yeah, I served there. And then we connect. And then I try to tell them, hey, you know, wear your stuff. That way the next place you go, somebody connects with you the same way, and we're connected. And it's good stuff. It's therapy. It's networking. And, you know, frequently you also get into conversations like, did you hear about the latest program in the VA? I did not hear about that program. And then you start, you know, like I say, network and share information. And then there's also a joy to it as well. And a big part of life, and you and I share these qualities, is just having that attitude. Because if you don't, I mean, what are we doing here? No, I mean, we got to help others. And not to get too mushy. But it's true.
As we get ready to close out our segment, it's funny you mentioned George Cataldo and Eddie and Louie, because I was going to kind of fashion a question about them. You know, this George Cataldo, the lovable guy, the silver fox, the crooner. But yet, you know what? There were times when I would see him at celebrations or memorials, Memorial Day events or Veterans Day, and hear him wax poetically about, you know, what his service to his country and wanting people to realize the importance of these special days for people who serve our country. That's service to our country. Go willingly and know that you may not come home, but that if you do, you may not, you know, you may come home not the same as you left. You know, recently visiting down in Washington, D.C. and seeing the work being done on the Vietnam Memorial and the Korean memorial that they have down there.
The
conflict. And knowing that, you know, that more is being done to remember those who did not come home. I feel is something that, again, that if I'm going to do any kind of a program and do it with a special guy like you, that we talk about those important elements. As we close out our segment, anything that you know, we should remember as individuals here in realizing our freedoms and that they came at a cost.
Well, I can't sum it up better than what you just said, the freedoms, you know, and the cost. And it's the old cliche. And a lot of cliches are cliches because they're just so true. And we use them over and over again for that reason too. And they're also powerful. And that includes the cliche that freedom isn't free. And last year I was honored to speak at my alma mater, Cardinal Spellman High School. And I stole the next line that follows it from the president of the college when he made remarks. And then he talked about freedom isn't free. And then he talked about the currency. And you know what that price is in its currency, and that currency is not just our treasure that we folks in the military uphold and try to use properly, but also the blood that was shed. How many towns? If I'm not mistaken, Pembroke, Abington, Brockton, Plymouth, all have at least two KIA in this last, the wars in the Middle East, and other towns have some as well. All those Gold Star families out there, that's the cost, and it's tough. I ask that we keep them in our prayers, and I honor their service. I know you do too, and ask other people to do the same with attending events and participating as much as they can. Take the kids to the cemetery, talk to the kids about history. Unlike some folks that say, you know, they're not getting into the schools, I know that's not true because I've got two children in elementary school and they are getting the history, and it's just a delight to sit down at night with them and talk about it, and then sometimes relate some of my experiences, you know, in comparison to great folks like these World War II veterans that we've talked about. So thanks again, Kevin. Really appreciate the honor.
Tony, I thank you very much for not only for, you know, anytime I call and ask about talking about the importance of these days, being a good friend, but also being a good citizen and somebody who cares about the one thing that's important, community, because, you know, we, there's together we are the fabric of what the South Shore is community, and it's important.
Nice. Couldn't say it better. And thanks for all you do to get information out to you and your team, to so many folks over these airwaves. Thank you, sir.
You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. We will step aside just for a moment, but fear not. We will return in just a couple of moments here at 95.9 WATD.
Are you worried about your drinking?
Or is someone else worried about your drinking?
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
There is no shame in living with a disease called alcoholism.
Regardless of your age, employment, or any other circumstances in your life, you deserve help from other individuals who understand what you are going through.
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
Call 617-426-9444 or find online meetings at aaboston.org.
Dad, you think UFOs will ever come?
Well, I'm not sure they've ever been invited.
Can we invite them?
Yeah, but how?
Well, we've got a flat roof and Christmas light strings. We can spell out UFOs land here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll hold the ladder for you.
Later that night, there arose such a clatter.
Dad, look out on the lawn! A UFO with a broken windshield!
Wow, better call Tiny and Sons. They'll replace that windshield and insurance pays.
Do space aliens have insurance?
Oh, they wouldn't leave home without it.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. Our service is out of this world. Just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
At South Shore Bank, helping you reach your financial goals is the priority. But helping you strengthen your community is our passion. Service is a commitment, but support is a calling. Success is the name of the game, but sharing success is the only way we win. As a mutual bank, we make sure that what's good for you serves the greater good. Because here, profits are reinvested in our communities. Success, the feeling's mutual. Visit us today at southshorebank.com. Member FDIC, member DIF, equal housing lender.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return for our yet another segment here on, as we're closing out, helping you to wrap up your Memorial Day weekend. And knowing, you know, Memorial Day has its, as I've already said in my prior segment, dedicated to Memorial Day, that, you know, we take special time during this time of year to remember those who gave the supreme sacrifice. But we also look at it also seasonally as the onset of the summer season. This is where the warmer months are ahead. And, you know, we get to enjoy the outdoors. We weren't able to do that last year. Joining us is one of our proud premier sponsors here on Monday Night Talk. Actually, he sponsors so many different things on this radio program. He's a staple here at Broadcast House. We have Peter Brown, as you know him from, a consummate business professional. He's somebody who's very active with the chamber, but now he's a doing yeoman's work with the Pilgrim Hall Museum down in Plymouth. If you remember, just a couple of weeks ago, he was part of the, you heard him, in and out when Rob and Lisa did their, you know, their very first road show, per se, remote. Peter, welcome back to the program, my friend.
Thank you, Kevin.
So, Peter, the first thing I need to say is, you know, you and I had a couple of conversations. I mean, at the height of the pandemic, and we were talking about how this pandemic was really affecting businesses. And, you know, and we were looking for brighter days. And, well, my goodness, it seems as though they are upon us here. Let's start out talking a little bit about the reopening process and, you know, what we're looking at for the months ahead.
Well, as the governor has been doing, we talked about it a little while ago, it's been slow and steady. And then the president came on and said, oh, look,
we don't have to wear masks anymore if you're vaccinated. It just kind of threw a wrench into everything. And I was like excited, but apprehensive, because a lot of our employees, like if you wanted to take a poll of our shop, it'd be exactly what America is right now. You have 3/4 are all vaccinated. You got that quarter that's trying to decide if they want to get vaccinated. And then you have that core group of people that don't want to get vaccinated. So it's good. I mean, it's what America is supposed to be. Your choice, you choose or you don't choose. But it kind of, with the reopening, we have to be diligent with the masks until they lift them. But we're excited. This is going to be the best summer ever.
Yeah, I really think you're right. We get other things. I think that we collectively, regardless of where you are regionally in the country, I think that many of us, I would hope that many of us, have a sense of appreciation for what we had and that hopefully we can return to. I was listening intently to the South Shore Morning News just over a week and a half ago when they were broadcasting live from Pilgrim Hall Museum, site of where, proudly enough, this radio program won an award because of the Pathfinders exhibit. And also knowing that not only did you have a hand, you know, in getting all the pieces together and pulling it all together, helping to pull it all together, not only that award-winning show, but that you were very instrumental in pulling together that show with Rob and Lisa. I mean, talk to me about what drives you when it comes to sharing such great gems like the Pilgrim Hall Museum.
What drives me is that it's our history. That museum is over 200 years old, and it's the cornerstone of Court Street in Plymouth. So when you pull off of 44 and you take a right on Court Street, you have Memorial Hall, you have one of the oldest churches on the street, then you have Pilgrim Hall Museum. And when they asked me to take over be the president of the board of the society, it was an honor. And I'm going to do whatever it takes to get the attention that it needs, because it's one of the oldest institutions on the street. It needs updates and needs, financial institution needs to be upgraded. A lot of the infrastructure needs to be updated. And overall, it's going to be one of the main parts of Plymouth when all the reopening starts. And when I asked, and tell you a quick story, it started out as the Plymouth Rotary Auction had buy an hour for WATD, so I won it. And Ruth Shirley won the other one. He went on one morning, and I said, I texted Rob and Lisa. I said, "Hey, how would you like to do a live remote in front of the Pilgrim Hall Museum?" And they said, "Sure." So then I reached out to some of the people that were in the Pathfinders show, and then I reached out to a couple of state reps and a senator and a past state, a state senator, president of the Senate, and they all said, "Sure." And I didn't have to do anything. All I did was just email people and they showed up. It was perfect.
But the genius of it is your passion for the community.
Well, if you look at the people that showed up that day, we had Matt Moratori. We had Sue Giovanetti, the executive director for the Plymouth Area Coalition. We had Senator Moran that just won Vinny DiMasino's seat. We have Kathleen Anatra, the state rep from Kingston. They're all, if you look at them as a whole and what the museum represents, specifically the Pathfinders exhibit, there's a lot of leadership going on. You have Matt Moratori that has 6 daughters. You have, Kathleen Anatra and Susan Moran, both women of stature now. You have Sue Giovanetti, the executive director of the Plymouth Area Coalition, which not only is the past chair, past president of the Pilgrim Hall Museum, but she's also the current chair of the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce. So there's a lot of huge leadership. And then not to mention the backbone of the Pilgrim area, Pilgrim Hall Museum, Donna Curtin. So their hearts are huge, and I was just a small part of it. And my dad was always the person that he wasn't the voice, but he always made sure our voices were heard, and that's where he instilled it in me. Some people can't be that. Some people can't be heard unless you help them have a voice, and that's what I try to do.
Indeed. And if you are just tuning into this segment while enjoying the final hours of your Memorial Day, your extended Memorial Day weekend, we are speaking with Peter Brown, a proud sponsor of this program, many programs on 95.9 WATD. Also, a proud member of the community here on the South Shore. Sure. Does he do a lot of work in Plymouth or in Pembroke? Yes, but he is really invested in the well-being of the South Shore because it's a tight-knit community. That's how I feel. And I think there are others who feel the same as I do. You know, you also were a past president of, you know, or have had heavy involvement with the multiple chambers of commerce in the area. Most recently, I think the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce that you presided over for a year. Knowing that, you know, we're gonna see more of the 400 celebrations. Are you excited for that? That we're gonna see that?
I am so excited, and I've been involved in a couple of different meetings about it, and hopefully. I think they've gotten the idea of what we need to do is that we're going to do it slowly. And to attest for this past weekend, we saw that we were lucky that the weather was kind of bad, but the previous Sunday, we saw that 90 degree weather and how the beaches were packed, how the downtown was packed. So people are rushing out to open themselves up. So now we got to really be strategic about this whole thing and say, all right, we don't want to do everything all at once. We want to make sure that we can get all these open so that it's not only enjoyable, but it's safe. And then I just saw that they were going to have the fireworks in Plymouth, which is exciting. So we got the maritime exhibit coming up, and it's just so much going on. It's going to be great.
What kind of a rebirth is it as a businessman yourself? What kind of a rebirth is it for businesses who were able to maintain and survive? Because we know that there were other businesses, especially when we're talking about hospitality, when we're talking about restaurants, that a lot of them had to close their doors because they could not sustain during a 14-month pandemic where everything was, you know, limited as to what you can offer.
So my experience is not just my business, but being in the chamber and especially in the hospitality, it was almost like we had a year-long hurricane or a year-long blizzard, you know, and I think they had to rethink what business is and what they need to do to stay alive. If you look at a lot of the Court Street, Main Street, Plymouth, Pembroke, and a lot of the smaller restaurants, they turned themselves around. They did the online stuff. They did the takeout. They were able to just survive enough to stay open. Now the crux of the problem is try to reopen, and you know trying to get the help that they need to reopen because people have been pent up so long they just want to go out to eat all the time. And what the public has to understand is that the service industry now has changed. And it has to be, we have to pay a little bit more money for that service and understand why. And if to get these people, not only to get them back to work, but before COVID, they were kind of underpaid. They were kind of being taken advantage of a little bit. And we have to understand, it wasn't just, I'm not talking about business owners, it was us as consumers were taking advantage of. We're expecting this price point. And in the real world of business, that price point is not conducive to stay alive. So we have to understand when we go outside going out to dinner, we start going out to do takeout, we start doing these service industry type of junctures, we're going to understand it's going to cost us a little bit more money. And it'll be worth it in the long run because the service, it will be amazing like it was before. But it'll be just so much better when people are happier that they're getting taken care of.
When you are having conversations with some of your peers who run businesses, who operate businesses, who own businesses, what's the general consensus as in regards to having enough help? Is that one area right now that is in dire need, is being able to find folks who may have left an industry to go to another, and that's leaving voids in certain areas?
That's exactly right. I mean, the construction trade specifically, and the automotive trade, they're trying to find techs. And there's still a lot of people out there that can work that aren't coming back to work yet. And I don't know if it's apprehensive or anxiety, or they just were able to take advantage of the situation, which is understandable, especially if you're a family. And that's the key right there, is that what the unemployment aspect of it, they've already started to change that. People just need a little bit of a shove and say, all right, let's this is all set. Everybody's getting vaccinated. Let's just get back to work. And one of the other problems that we're seeing too is to try the in-home schooling really turned a lot of the mothers into teachers. And now that they're trying to transition, and it was like somebody flicked the switch on, but you just had all these kids staying home, mothers and fathers staying home for a year, 14 months, schooling their kids. You can't just flick that switch back on and throw them back into school. The kids all have to be retrained. A lot of those people that had jobs are not going back to work yet because they want to make sure their children are ready to go. So I think that's a big aspect of it too. Childcare is going to be one of the biggest things that we're going to need to fix, because when these people go back to school, the kids are going to need to go somewhere or be taken care of after school. And this is where this past year, the effect of COVID and the being home all the time, going to need a lot more attention to get them back up to speed.
Okay, we're speaking with Peter Brown. He is a local business owner, but he's also very invested in the community with a lot of giving his own personal time to be a part of local chambers of commerce. So right now, a president of the board for the Pilgrim Hall Museum in Plymouth. And we're just talking about the reopening process and, you know, the return of life. Probably one of my final two questions to you, Peter, is as a business owner and as you had kind of so eloquently put it earlier in regards to that there's some folks who are still kind of careful. Myself, I'm still going to wear a mask probably for the next few weeks because I'm concerned that maybe we're rushing back into life as we knew it prior to the pandemic. Do you feel yourself that we could see a return of COVID and that this could be yet another wave? Or do you feel that, are you confident that our government and the folks who have worked hard to put together a vaccination, that if in fact we have a handle on this and we're not going to live life like we did in March, April, May of 2020?
That's an interesting question because we see all these variants that are coming in, and a lot of the public is a good, 25-30% that haven't been vaccinated yet or probably won't be vaccinated. So that's, I'm very concerned about in the fall. And I still have my mask mandate in the shop because we have a few people that haven't been vaccinated yet. But I think, I get why the president and the governor, what they're doing, I totally respect what they're doing, but there is a wave of people, and I can't blame them, that have been cooped up for so long that it's just going to explode this summer. And we're just going to have to be cautious. I'm going to be very, very cautious where I go and where I go at the restaurants and stuff and public places and traveling. Because I don't want to revisit what we did before. I mean, I was shut down for almost 3 weeks. And I just don't want to relive that.
Okay. As we wrap up, three quick questions I'll hit at you. They're quick hit questions.
Okay.
Something new that I'm trying on the radio program to be a little insight.
Is there anything to do with food?
It might. Okay. It might. It was something I actually did a beta test with Rob Hackl on last week's show.
I'm ready.
I'm going to try to do with you this week, and that is one thing you're looking forward to doing this summer that you couldn't do last summer. One thing.
Beach.
Okay. Favorite summertime food that you couldn't enjoy last year that you want to enjoy this year?
Lobster roll.
Okay. Final question. Are you more likely to eat something hot or cold? Are you more of an ice cream guy, or are you more of a seafood kind of a guy?
Seafood.
Very good. Anything you want to say as we wrap up this segment, my friend?
So as we come off this long weekend, just remember everybody that passed and all those people that need us still.
Excellent. There he is. Peter Brown. Peter, thank you always for your support. Thank you for your friendship. And thank you for always doing what's in the best interest of the community as a whole.
Thank you, Kevin.
You got it. There he is. Peter Brown, all around good guy and a great community partner. We're going to step aside. That actually wraps up the first hour of Monday Night Talk. Beware. There is a second hour coming up in just a moment. Stay tuned. You're tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
Tiny of Tiny and Sons Glass. If you're driving along right now and you've got an angry little ding in your windshield.
Ouch!
But good news. We can fix that ding. We'll fix that ding before it spreads. Drive on over to Tiny and Sons, Route 53 Pembroke. We will fix that ding. Your insurance company will pay.
And that's why I sing, give me that ding.
So give me that ding. Tiny and Sons Glass will fix that ding. Insurance company will pay.
That's right.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
At South Shore Bank, helping you reach your financial goals is the priority. But helping you strengthen your community is our passion. Service is a commitment, but support is a calling. Success is the name of the game. But sharing success is the only way we win. As a mutual bank, we make sure that what's good for you serves the greater good. Because here, profits are reinvested in our communities. Success, the feeling's mutual. Visit us today at southshorebank.com. Member FDIC, member DIF, equal housing lender.
Buying, selling, or trading in a car? Learn from the experts how to make the process work for you. Tune into the Boss Auto Show every Saturday after the news at noon on 95.9 WATD. Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Joining me is Whitman Town Administrator Lincoln Heineman. Lincoln, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Kevin. How are you?
Good. Well, it's everybody's favorite time of year. Anywhere, I think, between late February and maybe mid-June. And the folks who actually practice open town meeting, purest form of democracy, Town of Whitman. Going to be having their annual town meeting coming up on June 2nd. What has it been like getting prepared for your first budget serving in the role as town administrator in that community?
Sure. I think uncertainty is probably the word of the day for everyone, you know, both in town government and throughout everyone's lives. But, I think now finally with the governor's orders, and returning to normalcy now, coming up on May 29th. And then, you know, obviously going into the summer in June, I think we're all excited to be getting back to normal. The the largest area that we've been focused on is balancing the budget, getting the budget organized for the new fiscal year 2022 that's coming up on that begins on July 1st. And then also figuring out how the various pieces of federal aid fit into that and fit into the planning going forward. The biggest piece that folks will see is different in terms of how the budget is reviewed and presented at town meeting this year. There will, as there have been in, you know, for many years, two columns. One, the requested amount in this year. It's entitled Fiscal Year 2022 Board of Selectmen Proposed Budget, and then the Finance Committee Committee's recommendations. The big difference this year is rather than having many line items, in the interests of flexibility and transparency, each department is will now have two line items, one for salaries and the other for expenses. And, you know, I think we can talk more about, you know, what that budget consolidation means, but that's sort of the biggest change in how people will see it this year.
Now, normally, I want to say that Whitman and its neighboring community, Hanson, have their annual town meetings. I think it's usually like the first Monday of May. What was the antithesis to move it to June this year? I know last year they also had to push it back because of a global pandemic, but why this year was there a move to push it back a month?
Sure. Well, it was really largely in response to the pandemic and the restrictions that were in place at that time, and obviously wanting to keep everyone safe, you know, at that time. So as you know, the town of Whitman's bylaws do say, typically speaking, that town meeting is the first Monday in May each year. This year, May 3rd. But the decision was made, you know, collectively to move it back. Originally, it was always thought that we'd be doing it for the last little while here on June 2nd. Originally, it was being planned for the high school field, similarly to last year, how we did it. Because obviously, you know, being outside, you know, it was thought to be safer. But now, beginning May 17th, the decision was made to move it back indoors because of the changes that have been identified by the governor of, you know, the restrictions ending on May 29th. So town meeting will be on June 2nd, 7:30 p.m. indoors in its traditional place, which we're very happy about, in the town hall auditorium.
And this all happened relatively fast. What was it like as a town official where you have to make some of these decisions pretty fast?
Yeah, flexibility. You know, I used that word earlier, but the biggest point is flexibility and responding to events and making sure that, you know, everyone's staying as safe as they can during the pandemic, but also getting back into business and moving forward. But part of this, too, is Town Hall is going to be reopening on June 1st. So that's really exciting too. I know it's exciting for the town. It's exciting for the employees, all of us, to get back to normalcy.
And will there be a degree of normalcy, or will some of the things that were introduced to us during COVID, will some of those still be in place somewhere, whether it's meetings, whether it's how business is done?
Yeah, great question. So as far as how business is done at Town Hall, it'll really pretty much be going back to normal. We did, when folks come back into Town Hall, they'll see we made some improvements to make some areas, you know, if, just for flu season, right, or cold season, that kind of thing, to have some barriers, glass barriers that can windows that can go up or down depending on, you know, if we have a pandemic going on. Hopefully we don't have another one anytime soon, or flu season or whatever, but still having holes through which people can easily talk with each other. So that's really sort of the only changes that people will notice around Town Hall. Certainly as far as boards, committees, commission meetings, those will be returning to normalcy as well under the current law in June, needing to be held in person. So I know a lot of boards, you know, and committees, everyone's really looking forward to getting back in person.
It's worth noting that Hanson residents during the recent election passed a $1.85 million override. Do their finances or their financial news have any influence on Whitman financially?
So not directly, but obviously we're partners, you know, and particularly we're partners with the regional school district. So there's no direct impact on our budget with that passage, but certainly it brings some certainty to what we know, you know, provided Whitman town meeting also passes its share of the school's budget, provides some certainty for the schools and for the educational system as to what that's going to look like in the school year from, you know, from this fall into next spring.
Talking budgets, you teased it a little bit earlier during our conversation, doing a little modification, consolidating, kind of saddens me a little bit because I've so been, you know, over the years of covering Whitman Town Meeting, whether it was Michael Hayes or now your current moderator, Michael Seeley, it'd be like, okay, we're going to take, you know, there's some 300, 400 line items that folks can go number 42 and that they can have consolidating it to where it's salaries and the budget for the department. How essential is that? And what really went into the framework for that?
Sure. Well, and I want to be clear. So all of that budget detail and actually a little bit more information, all of the really granular line by line information will absolutely be available at town meeting. It's available on the town's website beforehand. So, you know, there's certainly no loss of information. So I want to be, you know, really clear on that.
Okay.
The consolidation up into reduced number of lines. We still have quite a few lines, you know, because there's various town departments, but that consolidation up into there, you know, a lot of it, I think at the end of the day really does sort of speak to some flexibility, but also some transparency, right? It's easier to see here's the full amount that's going to this department, and here's the full bottom line amount that town meeting attendees, that residents are being asked to pass in order to fund their local government. So that was really sort of the primary thinking behind it. I actually just spoke with moderator Seeley the other day, and he's certainly intending to execute the warrant and to have town meeting's consideration of that budget really in the same way. That is to say, you know, calling off the lines and asking for holds, and you know, certainly there'll be the same, the very same opportunity for input that there's always been on individual budget amounts.
Good, excellent. Thank you for the clarification on that. What were the challenges that you faced putting this budget together? Whether it's working with department heads or certain committees to finalizing the spending plan for 2022.
Sure. Well, I'd say the biggest challenge is, a limit on the revenue coming in. Right. We know about Proposition 2.5, and there's obviously just reality limits on also on local receipts. You know, on fees coming in, on state aid coming in, et cetera. So, I think it's a story of limited revenue and very limited revenue increases. But in particular, fixed costs going up at a higher rate. So in particular, when we're thinking about that, we're thinking about pension obligation going to the county pension system and those obligations are going up at a rate far exceeding how much revenues are going up. So those two factors together, and the other sort of main factor, it's a fixed cost that goes up, you know, and it is what it is health insurance. So really sort of those two primary factors going together lead to some friction, right? If your revenue doesn't grow at the same rate that the expenditures, that the fixed expenditures do, you have a problem. So one of the main things that, you know, that myself, the finance committee, and the town accountant, all of us, the board of selectmen, worked on together was to find budget reductions where we could, find things that we could do a little more efficiently, be creative about some other funding, outstanding funding sources that we had in town that we hadn't been, that we hadn't used in the past, and putting those pieces together to still be able to provide the same level of services that we do in this current fiscal year 2021, but doing it at a slight, you know, at a slightly reduced cost, finding these other sources of revenues to get to a balanced budget. You may recall, and a lot of folks may recall who, you know, who pay close attention to town business, there was a what's called the Madden Report that was done finalized about a year and a half ago, and by an outside expert looking at the town's finances. And actually that report identified that we would very likely need an operating override, an operating proposition 2.5 override in order to provide services in the same way that we do now in fiscal year 2022, this fiscal year that we're talking about upcoming. But I'm really happy, you know, to report to, you know, to town meeting, and, you know, that we were able to work together to avoid that operating override for this year. So it's that part is really good news, I think.
And you know, talking about funding and revenue and receipts, the state, I feel, plays a role at times when it comes to local aid or funding. What are we realizing? What is the town of Whitman realizing from the state, if anything?
Sure. So the state aid, the direct state aid, unrestricted aid to Whitman is a little more than $3 million. $3,009,623. So that's, you know, that's an important chunk of our $42 million budget, but obviously by no means, you know, the largest piece of it, you know, but certainly an important part of it.
Yeah, just tuning in, we are speaking with Lincoln Heineman. He is the town administrator for town of Whitman, and we're talking about their upcoming town meeting, the annual town meeting. Of course, you get the special that is built into that. We touched upon state monies. Let's talk a little bit. During COVID, we've seen a lot of funds that have come in. We saw the CARES Act that was distributed by the county. We also know that we have something called ARPA, which is the American Rescue Plan Act that was passed by President Biden. Talk to me about any monies that you could be realizing over the next year. And is that something that's part of the budget process or outside of it?
Well, in this case, really sort of outside of it. And I want to touch briefly on something you mentioned, so folks are aware of it. Similarly, regarding special town meeting, we're actually not technically having a special town meeting last year. Last year was the first year, and we're continuing that process of actually embedding the special town meeting within the annual town meeting warrant. So that's a little interesting for government nerds, so to speak. That's sort of a little an interesting little nuance, just so folks know. Again, I believe last year was the first year the town of Whitman did it, but continuing that process this year. As far as the American Recovery Plan and the previous CARES Act monies from the federal government, when I can touch on the CARES Act monies at first. So we have been working, you know, with our county partner, Plymouth County, on using those monies. Those monies need to be used and are required to be used by the federal government on direct COVID response. So unfortunately, in that respect, you know, they can't be used to directly supplement the everyday work that we do, you know, all the time, you know, for the town. But instead really need to be focused on, for example, extra cleaning. Overtime when we were doing testing and vaccinations, you know, direct COVID relief. So there are still some funds that have been reserved for the town of Whitman at the county. Those funds need to be spent again direct COVID response activities until the end of this calendar year. December 31st, 2021. So we'll be continuing to work with the county to, you know, to certainly spend those monies continuing to respond to the pandemic. As far as the American Recovery Plan monies, it just passed earlier, a couple months ago this year. We're still really waiting for guidance from the federal government. We've received just last week, actually, the federal government released some guidance on those monies. To be clear, the town has not received those monies yet. the state actually needs to, for communities like Whitman that have a population under 50,000, the state actually will be applying for those monies to the federal government on our behalf. That's how the legislation was written. So that's the process we need to follow. And in addition, we're still waiting on some guidance on exactly when those funds are received from the federal government through the state, which we're not sure when exactly that will be. We do know that there will be some restrictions on how it can be used. It does appear that by my calculations, we may be able to use approximately $1 million at some point in revenue replacement. That's still an open question. We still need more federal guidance about exactly what that means and how we can use it. And there's also an indication that perhaps we may be able to use some of it for water, sewer, or broadband direct infrastructure. So certainly that's a hope of mine that when that final federal guidance is released, that perhaps we might be able to use some of it in towards a desperately needed new DPW building. That's my hope. We certainly need that building. Our current building is really in rough shape. So that's my hope, but we really have to wait for more federal guidance to find out if we can do that.
Yeah, that's definitely a conversation that I'd love to have with you down the road, because I know that there've been multiple attempts or asks on behalf of the voters, the taxpayers, about a new DPW building, and just nothing has seemed to have been something that residents have unanimously said, yes, this is something that not only be a long-term solution for our community, but it'd also be okay with my pocketbook and my budget, my personal budget moving forward. So I want to give you an opportunity to cherry pick a few things, or several things if you want, because the idea of our conversation here is to better inform folks about what they're going to see or they're going to discuss on the floor of town meeting come June 2nd. What are some of the things that you want to make sure you get information out about on this particular warrant that's coming up?
Sure. Well, as we talked about earlier, certainly I think the one of the biggest things that folks, that'll be a change, and there's something certainly to discuss, if there's a desire to, obviously, is that change to what I would actually call sort of a semi-consolidated budget with those budget lines. We talked some about that. The other biggest item on the warrant is the Sewer Force Main project. So this is a long piece of, as probably just about all the viewers know, just about all of Whitman is on municipal sewer. And that sewerage is pumped through to Brockton and treated by the city of Brockton, with whom the town has a contractual relationship to do that. The main force main that brings that sewerage from Whitman to Brockton is really in rough shape. Folks may remember there have been several breaks, and the simple fact is that if we don't have a long-term solution there, we will have a big problem, right? Our sewage won't be going away. So what the project is, and I think a lot of people are aware of it, is replacing a large piece of a force main. What the force main means, is actually pumping the sewage, because not just by gravity, but pumping it through this new force main through to Brockton. It would be funded entirely by user fees for those who are on sewer, not on general, tax revenue. The elected Department of Public Works commissioners have already put in place a user fee increase that will be effective according to their vote in October. So that is one funding source that will be available if town meeting passes this project. But town meeting does need to authorize the project to actually have it go forward, and also authorize some debt. So that longer term debt It's a $14.47 million project. Sewer projects are unfortunately very expensive. It is what it is in that respect. But certainly it'll go out to bid if town meeting approves it. What the motion on town meeting floor will be is to use $1.5 million in retained earnings. That's the savings that's sort of the savings account of the town sewer, water sewer department. And then the remainder would be in borrowing, and that borrowing would be supported over the years by that increased sewer rate. So that's sort of the biggest thing, I think, under consideration. Two other items I just wanted to briefly mention. I imagine it. One is Article 40 that will generate some discussion. The possibility of allowing the town to go out and have a lease with a private entity for a cell tower on a piece of land that's town owned, where there is currently a sewer pump station off of Commercial Place, off of Commercial Street. A private entity had contacted the town that builds cell towers and had identified this as a site that they might be interested in. To be clear, what's before town meeting is really the very, very first step in the process of even the possibility. So state law indicates that in order for any contract, any lease, et cetera, longer than 3 years, town meeting would needs to even approve the consideration of that. So cell tower leases are typically at least are certainly more than 3 years. What the ask on the warrant on Article 40 is to see if the town is interested in the possibility of up to a 12-year lease. If that's approved by town meeting, that would be the very first step in the process. Would also be certainly a process for public input on regarding whether or not an RFP or a request for proposals or an invitation for bid even went out to ask folks about that. And then it would certainly, even if that process went forward, it'd certainly go before the Zoning Board of Appeals and the Conservation Commission for permitting as well.
Yeah, and that could be quite an endeavor. Is this something that could generate a windfall of money, or is it nominal?
Well, no. So that's precisely why I want to bring it to town meeting's consideration, because it would be revenue generating. Absolutely. Precisely how much and perhaps significant. I've done quite a bit of research on this. The amount of funds really would depend on, the bids got back if the process went that far. But it could be up to $150,000, I'm hearing, in annual revenue for this kind of endeavor. So, in the context of the earlier revenue challenges that we talked about in an attempt to avoid tax increases wherever possible, this is sort of one revenue source that the town could consider in order to bring in other streams that aren't taxation.
Any other business in regards to town meeting or any articles do we want to make sure that we touch upon before we wrap up our conversation here?
Sure. Well, so one other thing that I certainly don't think it would probably generate a lot of discussion, but I still think it's really a great step forward. There are two articles to what's called recodify both our general and our zoning bylaws in town. And so, to be clear, none of these changes would be are substantive in any way. But what it does is, the bylaws over the years, both general bylaws and zoning bylaws, have been added to I don't want to say a haphazard way, but it's hard. They're not necessarily organized by subject matter, and it's difficult to find things and like items, like topics are not necessarily organized in the same way. So what this ask to town meeting is to regularize and have regular numbering and categorization, and also regular categorization of topics, so that like topics are together and the bylaws are more easily understood by everyone. So
anything? I know a lot of communities have looked to do rezoning to try to bring in and generate interest, especially when it comes to economic development. Is that something that could be on the forefront or down the road for Whitman?
I think it certainly is. You know, there's nothing to that effect on the warrant this time, but it's certainly, I think, certainly heard from a lot of stakeholders that there's some interest in perhaps exploring certain options to encourage economic development. You know, we have a really strong commercial sector in town, and it's thriving, which is fantastic. And I think that's a really important discussion to have over the coming year and years about what the town can do to encourage that.
Anything that we haven't touched upon that maybe I haven't brought up as a subject matter, but maybe you want to discuss or even maybe reemphasize anything that we touched upon?
Sure. Well, the biggest subject, you know, in addition to the sewer force main and perhaps the cell tower that may generate discussion is the budget. You know, and I think the biggest thing that I want to emphasize is, you know, that all the information and actually some more information in terms of transparency that has always been provided to the voters, actually be some more information that will be provided. So I think, I was certainly looking and looking forward to a robust debate if folks want to have it on that. But I think in the end, it actually will make it clearer what the town's being asked to approve in terms of budget.
Sir, thank you so much for your time. It's really appreciated.
Thank you. No, thanks very much for making the time, Kevin, and it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
We're going to step aside, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
If you want a drink, that's your business. If you want to stop, that's for Alcoholics Anonymous.
AA is an inclusive fellowship of individuals all around the world. The one thing you need to ask yourself is, am I ready to do something about my drinking problem? For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, and to find a meeting near you, call 617-426-9444 or visit aa.org.
Here's the dirt on dust. It may seem fine, but it's actually made of dead skin cells and dust mite droppings. That's where Swiffer Heavy Duty Dusters come in. With thousands of specially coated fibers to trap and lock dust in one swipe. Dust can't hide on ceiling fans and bookshelves anymore. When you're done, just remove the disposable cloth and voila! That dust is gone for good. Now that you know the dirt, say goodbye to the dust. Swiffer Heavy Duty Dusters. Stop cleaning. Start Swiffering.
Sheila, we need to set up Johnson's quarterly review.
Janowski Investments keeps portfolios profitable, but a double client base calls for double the advisors.
Hello. Hi, Janet. I'm so sorry. Pulling up your portfolio right now. Give me a sec.
Indeed can help them hire the people they need.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. When you sponsor a job, you immediately get your short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Plymouth 400 Inc. continues their mission of education and commemoration of the 400th anniversary of Plymouth's founding with a new television series called Plymouth 400 Conversations. The program will focus on authors, filmmakers, artists, and poets who discuss how the 400th anniversary commemoration influenced their work. Each episode premieres Thursday nights at 7:30 on PAC-TV, but available online for everyone to see the following day. Despite the pandemic, the 400th anniversary commemoration continues into 2021 with great virtual programming now, including this fascinating new virtual series, and live events later in the year. See what Plymouth 400 Inc. has scheduled. Shop for Plymouth 400 anniversary merchandise to share with friends and family, and catch the most recent episode of Plymouth 400 Conversations. Visit Plymouth400Inc.org.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
And we return for the final segment of your Memorial Day Monday Night Talk radio program. We thank you for tuning in. as I know some of you do, maybe some of you don't, but it's okay. Fantastic way to end our program with a great guy. And I don't know, he's got one hat and he's got so many hats that he wears. We have the one and only Mike Joshua, who, as you know, yes, he is the host of Americanorama that you can hear here, I believe, on Thursday nights.
Correct. Right? 10 o'clock Thursday night.
Also, founder, executive director of Plymouth Rocks. This is a nonprofit that helps promote film and music events in and around Plymouth. Also, the vice president of the Soul Homestead Educational Center.
Correct.
Also, I believe, producer, director, and actor in The Last.
Correct.
So we'll tease and we'll talk about all the above. First, we'll start out of the gate talking about a little bit of a music series that's actually going to be kicking off later next month, June 26th, if I'm correct.
So June 26th, yep, absolutely.
And this is involving the Almost Famous Show, is that correct?
That is correct. Coming up June 26th, Soul Homestead Farm, that's in Middleborough. We're going to have a special Almost Famous night with John Shea hosting. We're going to have the Sarah Blacker Band as well as Megan Lynch performing.
How did that come together? What was the genesis of having a series? Because this isn't just going to be in June, but I believe that there's going to be a reoccurring concert every month.
Yeah, it's once a month. We actually had one in May. My Hey Blondie tribute band actually kicked off the series. So we're one in, and now we're going to have one every month, June, July, August, September, and October. And basically it came, so I'm the vice president of the board there at Soul. And obviously COVID, you know, wiped out so many things for so many people, especially small nonprofits like the Soul Homestead. So all the programs went away. So a lot of the funding that we depend on to keep the farm going went away. But one thing we were able to do in 2020 was do some music programming, even though it started off very small with Abby Vale. She literally played over the internet for folks, and they were able to donate money because at that point, I think we could only have like six people at the farm or something in those dark days. But we were like, no, we can do something. So we did a show then. And then they were like, you can have 25 people. We did another show. You can have 40 people. So we were able to keep the music going at Soul, which has been happening for years and years, make a couple bucks. And then that kind of led us in to now where, you know, it's perfect timing. Things are opening up. We can do more people. We can bring in more funds and basically get a lot of funding to the programs that needed at the farm, and music is a great way to do it.
And if you could, a mission statement of the Soul Homestead Educational Center, what are some of the things that you offer and that you do that funding is essential?
Primarily kids programming. So we would do a lot of field trips. Obviously those things went away. So when you have, you know, whatever it is, five field trips a week, you know, throughout the school year coming in, schools from all over the South Shore, South Coast, and beyond. Basically just, you know, teaching kids about farming and the, you know, old time ways and gardening and soil and how things are, you know, all interconnected and why they're so important today. And we also have education programs ranging from kids all the way through adults. There's spinning classes and yarn making and rug making. Rug hooking is what they call it, and all kinds of great things for adults as well. So when you take those things away, it just makes it so hard to keep things going. And also we rent farmland, so we don't actually farm ourselves at Soul, but we lease property to farmers that do. So we have Farmer Dave Perperoff, who runs the Plymouth Farmers Markets. He's our main renter. So he does all organic stuff on the farm from there. But we have all kinds of farmers there right now, coming through, five or six usually around the slate. So it's an awesome, awesome place to be.
I have to ask you, here we are, we're 2 days into the mere opening of life back up as we know it here in the Commonwealth of Mass. How jazzed are you that at least life is returning to normal and hopefully that some of the things that we've enjoyed prior to 15 months ago can hopefully return.
Oh, I'm so ready. I'm ready. It's been a great weekend, even though the weather hasn't been great. But just to get out and know you can do stuff and, you know, just you can have your mask somewhere around just in case as needed, but you don't have to just have it, you know, riveted to your head at all times and be, you know, terrified that you're going to, you know, run into somebody and they're going to think something badly of you because you don't have your mask on yet. And you have to pull it out of your, you know, God, just it's going to take us a little while to get out of these habits, but I'm just thrilled, thrilled.
So will there be with these performances, you know, it's funny because the governor says, well, you know, depending on your organization, your business, it's up to you. Will there be any kind of mask mandate at any of these shows? Or is it like, hey, it is what it is?
I think right now we're just coming out of the you need a mask indoors for the bathrooms and the barns and that kind of stuff. But outside, we already hit that, you know, that you don't have to wear a mask outside. So it's I think it's going to be pretty pretty open. So we're just excited. You know, again, because we're an education program and kids, I think there's a different set of protocols for you know, students and classes indoors and that kind of stuff. But yeah, we're just the fact you can be on the farm grounds walking around and not having a mask. Yahoo!
Is there a website or a way for folks to find out more information about any upcoming events that you're going to be having or anything to help financially if they want to donate?
Sure. There's a donate button on both the website and the Facebook page. So the website is soulhomestead.com, S-O-U-L-E, homestead.com. There's also a music link online. You can click there and see the music shows that are coming up, even though the only one that's on sale right now is that June 26th WATD show with the Sarah Blacker Band. And also the Facebook page, also Soul Homestead. We have an event page there that you can link for tickets as well. And there's a donate button, I believe, there also. So yeah, any way you can help the farm is fantastic, whether it's coming to a show or, you know, just supporting us online, following the Facebook page, any little bit of support, we certainly appreciate.
You know, I already owe you an apology because one little detail I omitted about you and some of the things that you do so many things, is producing a really, really cool true crimes podcast. I've actually had both gentlemen on. They're on my program on a regular basis. They actually were on to kind of promote this particular podcast that they do with you. I only found out by accident that you were the producer. So I saw photos and I go, hey, I know them and I know him. And of course, what am I talking about? The Saints, Sinners, and Serial Killers podcast, done by best-selling authors Casey Sherman and Dave Wedge.
Yes.
What is it like to put that together?
So that's been a lot of fun and something that came to me new during COVID is podcast production and editing and so forth. So mudhousemedia.com, that's the company that's putting the Saints and Sinners together that I'm producing. So hats off to those guys, startup company, mudhousemedia.com. And they were like, hey, we have this new true crime show coming on with Casey Sherman and Dave Wedge. And maybe they're like, maybe we could give that to you to produce. And I was like, yes, like, excellent. Let's do it. Like you said, I didn't have enough hats. I needed another hat. And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And the greatest thing about those guys is that they're South Shore guys. Which I am, which we are. And, you know, if they said, oh, they're up in Gloucester, it might have been like, uh-oh. That's like the other side of the world. But no, the fact that we're all South Shore and can, you know, meet up easily and record and do all that stuff, it's been great. And those guys are just, they're awesome. Not just, you know, great writers, but great guys. And the stuff that they're talking about in these true crime podcasts, they've reported on it. They've been there. They've been on the scenes of these things. So a lot of great true crime stuff out there. But I think a lot of it is, you know, people just taking stories and, you know, kind of breathing some life into them, which is great. But these guys do that by saying, like, when I went to the courthouse, when I arrived at the murder scene, you know, when I was at the autopsy, like, it's just really, it's hard hitting stuff. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's the degree. I've listened to a couple of different true crime podcasts, And a lot of times it's kind of someone telling from a third point of view, not necessarily somebody who was the boots on the ground, somebody who was actually reporting for an outlet, but actually just somebody who's just kind of retelling the story.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's fine. And that has its place. But yep. That's why I think these guys are really ripping the lid off, because it's just so authentic. You know, again, with the Boston Strangler series that you can find at mudhousemedia.com. When Casey Sherman is talking about the story, you know, he was like, my aunt was the last victim of the Boston Strangler. I mean, that's how it starts. So who else, you know, you talk about a link, and then he has this personal journey he's had all his life, this connection to the story. And then he actually gets to go in and help bring, you know, all these new revelations, and they open up the case and all this stuff because he's directly, you know, involved as a family member, not only as a journalist. So it's pretty mind blowing.
Yeah. And the other thing is that they're very versatile in some of the stories they tell. I feel that there's different modes with these stories, and some of these stories are still evolving and still happening as we speak.
Yeah, and that's the great part about it, right? That a lot of this stuff is like the Boston Strangler case, still a big question mark. You know, they certainly arrested somebody, but did they get the right person? You'd have to listen to the podcast and find out.
Now, is it just them, besides them talking? And again, we're trying to build a scenario here, but there's more stuff that you actually are producing and adding in on some of these, where it's not just them talking, but you're adding other elements, right?
Oh, yeah. They have a lot of, you know, old news interviews and things that they bring in that they've, you know, collected that they can give to me to add into the stories. They wrote a book with James Patterson called The Last Days of John Lennon. Is that it? Yes, The Last Days of John Lennon. Yep. And that's what I'm working on. Literally just finished up. And those, I think part two is literally dropping today on Memorial Day for the John Lennon episodes. I mean, they went back to New York City and talked with, like, you know, Geraldo Rivera, who was a friend of John Lennon, and he was there, and witnesses that were there, and they get the actual police reports in their hands, you know, that, you know, literally blow the dust off 40 years ago and just, you know, get right back into the story. And it's really cool, the people that they bring in and just how they weave the story together.
Was it not one with Margaret Cho? Did you not do a podcast with Margaret Cho?
Yep, they do a side thing, like an unplugged Saints and Sinners that isn't exactly, you know, talking about crimes, but bringing in people who are also involved in that. And who knew that Margaret Cho is also into this true crime area. And she has her own show, I believe, also. So they reached out to her. We had her on the program. We had JP, John Payne, who's the founder of Death Row Records, on the show. Like, there's so many connections with people who have an interest in this stuff out there. So there's a little celebrity sideline as well.
So it isn't just necessarily one direction, as I said earlier. It's just that this is very eclectic. And I would think for you as a producer, it's got to be kind of fun, where, you know, you don't know what to expect, and you know, Geraldo Rivera or Margaret Cho, whoever the individual may be, knowing that they have star power, whether they're an A-lister, B-lister, or C-lister, that it could be part of the conversation that week.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I always tell the guys that I know when the, you know, by the time the show goes up on online, I'm the one that's heard it the most. I mean, they've written it and they've recorded it, but I've, you know, sat with it for hours and hours and hours. And I'm like, so if at the end, I'm still gripped, like, or if I get a little emotional at certain points, I'm like, well, that's a good sign, because I knew it was, I knew it was happening because I put it all together. So it's a really good sign. At the end of every program, I'm just like, you know, either I get the chills or I get emotional, or I'm like, wow, this is awesome. So I know the listeners are going to dig it.
Now, this is a little bit off script here, but they also own Fort Point Media, and they're more than just about writing books and podcasts, but like you, they're looking at possibly producing films. Is there a possibility that Mike Joshua could have a role or be able to work with that media company?
Yeah, I hope so. They definitely, I mean, they have Hollywood connections. They're always on calls with New York and Hollywood and talking about book rights and ideas and pitches. And it's kind of funny, because actually we've Casey and Dave and myself, we still haven't had that conversation as far as my, you know, my film work and that kind of stuff, because we're just kind of so busy. But I'm sure at some point, you know, we'll sit down and I'll be like, hey, I might be able to help with that.
And that, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, is the perfect segue to talk about The Last.
The Last.
The Last. And I never knew that you were a filmmaker. I never knew that it was something you dabbled in, that you were a writer. I mean, I know, now this, just so folks, just a little revisionist history here. I first met Mike and his wife many, many moons ago in a bandstand in Whitman, as they were part of a band. Was it Pretendica?
Yep, Pretendica, a Pretenders tribute band.
Yeah.
That was a great gig. We played there 2 summers in a row or something, yep, maybe 8 years ago. I don't know, yep, 10 years ago, a while, yep, ago.
And I was the silly guy who was somehow fitting himself in that bandstand to videotape them, and pan left and pan right. And it was, you know, and again, you're a fantastic musician. Your wife is a fantastic musician. The group was really good. It was enjoyable. There's some bands that I would get up and be okay. It's not my thing, right, but they're okay. But I mean, your music, that genre, I enjoy that kind of stuff.
Awesome. Thank you.
So that's how I came to know Mike. And then, you know, it's kind of evolved from there, where he does stuff here at 95.9 WATD. And then, you know, it goes deeper. The roots go deeper and deeper. Now here I'm learning is that you're a filmmaker and that you're an actor. And, you know, we're talking about The Last, which is now, which is available on Amazon Prime.
It is.
The concept of the film here is, was it a dystopian future?
Yeah, dystopian
setting.
Yep, dystopian futuristic. Now, some might say I kind of saw the future, because it's about a guy who is by himself in his bunker, and he only communicates with people via TV screens. So I think I nailed that. We have N95 masks in the film. It was a lot of fun. I just kind of, you know, went down that rabbit hole of, like, you know, like a lot of sci-fi writers do, of the future and what's happening and what's, you know, what's it going to look like and who could be fighting against, you know, the corporate powers. And so I came up with the story and I wrote it to be easily shot, you know, or cheaply shot, just not a lot of locations, not a lot of, you know, just a guy in front of the TV screens and a couple other things going on. So once I had the concept, you know, I wrote it relatively quickly. And then, so this would be the third feature film that I had done. That's why I knew, like, you got to keep it cheap. We don't have any money. We probably can't, you know, raise too much money. I mean, we raised a little bit, but, fortunately for myself, a good friend from Boston bartending and waitering days is my good friend Matt Stenerson, Stens, as he's known in Hollywood. He's a cameraman. He's been out there since the mid-90s, kind of when I was ascending in radio at WFNX. Maddie moved to L.A. and started his climb up the ladder as a Hollywood camera person. And he was working on, you know, he's worked on the biggest shows, and from Iron Man and, you know, with Jon Favreau. And he's worked on, he was on the Christian Bale set for, what's the Christian Bale movie?
Dark Knight?
Terminator? Was he in that's one of the Terminators? Why am I forgetting? I'm mixing things up. But anyway, he was on these biggest shows and we would always be talking. I'm like, that's so great. I'm like, we have to work together at some point. And we did a little like music video stuff together in like the early 2000s. We were able to go out to LA and shoot some videos with Maddie. But again, it was just like, that's like 1 day, 2 days and you're out. We're like, let's do a film at some point. And that's exactly what I was finally able to do. Look at the calendar and say, hey, do you have 2 weeks where we can shoot this? And he was just coming off the reboot of, forgetting all these, Star Is Born. He was on with Lady Gaga.
Oh, right.
He was literally coming off that. He had like 1 day off and then he came to help us shoot for 2 weeks in LA. And then he was nice enough to bring the entire camera package that would have cost us, you know, $100,000 to rent or something. No, he just brought that along. All we had to do was pay insurance. You know, he had lenses. He showed up with a couple crew guys who, you know, they went from like the big, the biggest sets right in Hollywood to my partner Kurt's, you know, home in Glendale. And these guys were like, man, what's going on here? Like, look at this little set. And he was like, hey, watch it. These guys are doing it. They're making a movie. And I was like, yeah, thanks, Maddie. This is great. Thanks for the camera and all the help. And so it looks like a wonderful piece of film, which it is, because we had the top Hollywood stuff to do it in. And then, yeah, shot for 2 weeks. And then it took a couple years to put together. It's always a struggle with no money to edit and do sound and just finish the darn thing, but it's done. It's called The Last, and you can see it on Amazon Prime.
You were correct. It was Terminator Salvation.
There we go. I knew it was a Terminator movie.
No, you stalled long enough for me to look it up. So.
That's good. I like that. Yeah, he was, remember when that's the film where Christian Bale like pulled a nutty and he like flipped out on someone and the whole thing went quiet. Maddie was on the set. He was literally there with the camera. And then he was just like waiting. You know, everyone was just waiting, looking at each other like, what's going on? And of course, the sound guy was still recording, which was the funniest part. But yeah, thanks to Maddie, we were able to do this film.
And again, if you're tuned in, we're speaking with Mike Joshua, and talking a little bit about one of the many things that he is involved with when it comes to the arts, whether he's producing, filmmaker, organizing events to help folks who need children's programs, you name it, he's a part of it. I was going to say, is your movie kind of reminded me, do you remember the movie Rollerball?
Yes.
James Caan, and it had that corporate overlord-esque. That's what it reminded me of.
Somebody else said that. I think my brother-in-law said that when he was like, Rollerball. I'm like, oh, that's good. Because, yeah, I love the, you know, the old Heston 70s Omega Man. And, you know, some of these don't hold up terribly well. Some of them hold up quite well. You know, I remember the Planet of the Apes, you know, the ABC Friday night movie. And you'd be like, wow. You know, when you only had three channels in your world. But yeah, I love the old time sci-fi 70s stuff, and it kind of helped us out to be like, hey, we don't have a budget, so let's just keep it in that vein, have it more about the story and the actors, and just go from there.
Now, have you begun working on your next film project, or is that just something as it comes to you? You don't plan these; it has to hit you.
I have a couple scripts, obviously, that I've been writing. The last, you know, many years, and one of them, funny that you asked that, I am working it now into being a podcast and telling the story that way in different episodes, because this is just something that's starting to happen in Hollywood. I mean, some of the, you know, I think Rami Malek from, he was in the Queen movie, won the Oscar for best actor, Mr. Robot, you might know him from. Mm-hmm. He has a podcast that I'm forgetting the name of it, but I think he was like, hey, I have this thing written. I know what I want to do. I can make it a podcast like immediately, as opposed to waiting a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years for these things to come together and pitching, and you need money. And so I looked at that and I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll just start doing that, put the story together, and then it'll be a podcast series, and then you can play it for the producer, director, money executive, you know, the money people that you're going to need, instead of just flopping a script down in their lap, of which they have thousands already. Give them something to listen to on their drive home, and maybe they can go, oh, this is interesting, let's talk more about this. So that's hopefully coming in the fall. Originally I thought the summer, but as you can tell, I've got other things happening. I'm a little busy.
You do.
But yeah, that's what I'm looking at more of doing film pitches as podcasts.
Hey, right. Anything we want to touch upon before we go? Again, knowing that the state is opening up, where life is returning to normal. Air quotes. Anything on the horizon for Plymouth Rocks? Anything we want to tease while we have 3 or 4 minutes, or is that still in the works?
Probably just hoping for some kind of winter fest. Again, now that everything's opened up and people are like, hey, we could do this, we could do that. But does that mean 9,000 people in the streets of Plymouth in the winter? I don't know. I'm not sure. Is that still what Winterfest looks like? So we just have to kind of look at that. But one thing that we did do that we were able to do this spring into summer was the Plymouth Parklets project. We were able to raise money through a GoFundMe to build out the parking spaces where people have outdoor dining on Main Street there in Plymouth, just in time for the busy season. Obviously, right now, everyone's going to be super busy. To build out these little parklets little decks where they can put their tables on. And we were able to do that for three restaurants in Plymouth. So as Plymouth Rocks, that's, we're happy about that and looking forward like everybody to the future.
Well, Mike, I want to thank you for sharing some of your time. Again, you're a busy guy, but sharing some of the great things that you are doing here as a South Shore guy.
South Shore, hang in there. June 26th, Soul Homestead, Sarah Blacker Band. Come on outside. We'll have beer. We'll have local food. Music. It's going to be awesome at a big 125-acre farm. So you can still have your space if that's important to you.
When you say food, is it going to be food trucks or is it going to be vendors there?
We had a vendor for the first one in May, but this time I think we are going to have a food truck here at June 26th be a food truck, and Mayflower is going to be providing the beer, and we usually make something sweet up right at the farm for that. A Simpson Springs soda and real spring water, and so yeah, it's a real hootenanny over there at soulhomestead.com.
Yeah, Simpson Spring, where they actually have a actual spring in the town of Easton.
Yep, and it's the real thing. It's real spring water, because some of it's not.
Mike, thank you again, and thank you for at least sharing a little bit of your Memorial Day weekend with me.
Absolutely. Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it.
You got it. And that's all the program that we have here, folks. Thank you again for tuning in. Until next week at 6:15 p.m. Have yourself a great night.